Hi, welcome to the movies
hi.
You forgot. Oh, Christ.
Oh.
I don't like this new intro. Every time I say hi, you say hi back.
Oh, you're explaining.
Hi. Welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast, the show in which me, your host, Adam Richmond, and his best buddy, Joe Devine, say hello, Joe. We talk about the movies we forgot we'd even seen in the first place, or films. Sometimes we talk about films. On today's episode, this is a little bit different. We're inserting an end of year kind of review.
It's the Movies You Forgot Awards.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. He wants it to be like an awards thing. I hate awards.
Yeah. That's why I didn't say that word to you at any point during the planning stages until we started recording. And now I'm using the word awards because I know that you would have rejected it out of hand if I'd used that word.
So we're going to rattle through a couple of categories and then we'll be back to regular business next week.
Yes.
There might be a little pause and then we'll come back bigger, better, stronger, harder with swingers.
Yeah.
Swingers.
Absolutely. I think that's the next one, right? Yeah.
We've already teased that. And then we're also going to plan to do a Matrix special.
Oh.
But anyway, let's just crack on to the first award.
Best of the year.
What was the best film that was released this year that we saw this year? That's what we're going to begin with. Joe, I'm going to ask you, what was the best film that came out this year that you saw?
Well, I haven't been to the cinema very much this year, Adam, nor have I watched many new films. But I did manage to get out a few times. The best film I saw, new film I saw this year in the cinema, was The Dead Don't Hurt, the Viggo Mortensen directed and starred Western.
Oh, nice one. Yeah, no, I'm really annoyed that I haven't got to see that. It's a good flick, right? I don't know. I'm going to watch it now. It feels like a Joe film.
It's really good. It's really good. It's got Vicky Creeps. Vicky Creeps in it, who's outstanding, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, like she's absolutely exceptional in the film. That's the main reason I loved it so much. Obviously, I love Viggo Mortensen. I didn't know he directed it when I went to the cinema to see it. I just knew that he was in it. But it makes a lot of sense having watched it. I thought it was very delicate and subtle. I don't know if it's his directorial debut or not. Do you know?
I don't think it is.
I think
he's directed other flicks.
Right. Well, I mean, he's a dab hand, Adam. He's good at it. Or at least he's good at it when it's something kind of... I hate to say it. When I say gentle, I don't mean that the film doesn't pack a punch or that it's nice and drifts along. I just mean it's difficult themes handled very delicately. It handled in a very gentle way. But I wasn't really expecting that much from it, apart from thinking, well, it's got Viggo in it. It's sort of a Western. I'm sure it'll be good. It'll have some heft. It's just fantastic. And I'm not certain I'd seen Vicky Creeps in anything before, but she's wonderful. Like it's definitely one of the performances of the year for me. So that's my new film of the year, The Dead Don't Hurt, would heartily recommend. What's yours?
My film of the year is probably at the opposite end, far more mainstream, but I still like to think it's a little bit edgy. Because
Civil War.
Close.
Oh,
fucker. That was a close second. But no, it's Furiosa. Furiosa is my film of the year.
Yeah, on the last podcast you spent a while talking about how happy you were that made you really countercultural because no one else liked it.
Yeah. But not at the time. I didn't go in there with that in mind.
That was just a nice bonus.
It's just a nice bonus in the same way that I got that from Joker Folly Part Deux. I got that same little bonus for everyone else hating it and thinking it was shit and me going, oh yeah, no, I think it was fine.
That's the good thing, isn't it? Because it's like, obviously there are people who pretend to like things that no one else does in order to set themselves apart. But you really are cool, aren't you? You actually do like things that no one else likes.
Yeah. But I've also picked something that is exceedingly mainstream.
Yeah.
And Hollywood.
That's your inversion of being cool and stand out, because the thing is, right, it's like, let me tell you what I think about you.
Okay, you tell me.
I'm just gonna lay my cards on the table now. You're like someone who hangs out with all very progressive liberal people, and you know, when you were younger, your liberal, radical, left-wing views, they would stand out in the family because the family were all centrist, right? So when you said things like, drugs should be legalized, it was cool and weird, yeah? But then when you get past university and all your friends, you know, you're at a party and you say, drugs should be legalized, and they all go, yeah, we know, we agree. You go, oh, I'm the same as these people, because you get stuck in the little bubble, the echo chamber. So then within the echo chamber, you create another smaller little bubble where you start to say, actually, drugs should be illegal. And the reason is because of this statistic, yeah? And that's you in films, right? You hang out with me and I like all cool films. I actually do. And yeah, all of your other friends, they're all cool friends who like cool stuff and, you know, left field. That's what I'm trying to say. Left field movies, little independent films. So your specific inversion to set you apart from the people that are in your immediate surroundings is to like Tom Cruise and to talk about it all the time, because as if you're so cool that you don't even have to pretend to be cool by liking the left field stuff. You actually like Tom Cruise and you own it, and that makes you even cooler, two levels cooler than the cool people. And that's why you liked, that's not why you liked Furiosa, but it's why you liked that you liked Furiosa. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I don't like Tom Cruise. I love the Mission Impossible series, just to be clear. I don't want to be confused as a Timothy Cruise apologist.
That would be quite easy to do, having listened to this podcast, but it's good to clear that up.
I think so. You know, I want, it's very important to me that I am not misrepresented and that my soul is seen and understood. I don't, you know, it does deeply disturb me that someone would misunderstand what I say and throw it back in my face. That's
your worst nightmare.
That would trouble me. But yeah, that is exactly why it pleases me that I genuinely enjoyed Furiosa. It's a fantastic film. It's wonderfully made. There's so many sequences in it that they're phenomenal.
Is it very chasey?
Not entirely, but there's the beginning is this just amazing, almost near, it's dialogue-free bike chase across the desert.
Mm.
And I just thought, this is fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
And then there's more of those kinds of sequences. There's lots of silliness. You're like this kind of post-apocalyptic silliness with like leather and like silly people with silly names.
There's Dementus, there's Praetorian Jack, there's the History Man.
Yeah.
Immortan Joe.
He's from Fury Road.
The People Eater. Oh, there's Organic Mechanic.
Yeah.
And Mary Jabbiser, Rictus Erectus.
Yeah.
Erectus. And there's Scrotus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Smeg. That's the sort of thing you would like, isn't it? And the Octoboss. I mean, just Toe Jam. This does look like a good film.
It's great. It's just great fun. I just got it on Blu-ray. I'm looking forward to rewatching it. I might be eating my words come next week.
Right.
But at the minute,
it's your film of the year.
What was the best film we watched from any year this year?
But for the first time this year. It's called the New to You Award.
Oh, okay. Can you announce that?
Well, I can if you want me to. Yeah. How should I do it?
Just do it again. Just say, this award is called the New to You Award.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Let me get into. Please welcome to the stage, presenter for the New to You Award, Adam Richmond.
So here we are. Oh, wow. So lovely to see you all today coming out to support the Movies You Forgot Podcast Awards. So many faces, new and old.
Mm.
I'm just going to announce now, I'm going to open up the envelope. Some people say envelope. I say envelope. going to announce my choice. Something's just collapsed. The best New to You Award, as voted for by me, Adam, is First Man.
Oh, is it?
Directed by Damien Chazelle, starring...
Wow.
Timothy Gosling from 2018.
Timothy Gosling.
That's the... It's a tough one. That pips the post. I had Babylon was in the mix.
Yeah.
A film from 2022 called Funny People. No. a film from 2022 called Funny Pages, which is a very odd little comedy about a comic book, wannabe comic book writer. And then also a foreign flick called The Worst Person in the World about a young Norwegian woman and her loves and losses, etc. But it's got to be First Man. I thought it was phenomenal.
Well, let me say, you were effusive about Babylon. First Man, we kind of glazed over a little bit. I'm surprised to hear you pip that.
I thought we were going to come back to it.
Right.
And we never did. But because Babylon was more recent and, yeah, like it spoke to something particular.
Mm.
First Man, I dismissed seeing it at the time because it felt like it was pitched as Oscar bait. And it got written off very quickly. And so then it just looked really dull. Like, who wants to see a film about Neil Armstrong? And I just fell in with the crowd and I didn't watch it. Then you watch it and it is completely un-Hollywood film. There's nothing Oscar baity about it in any way. There's no, there's nothing in the performance or the writing that sort of screams, give us an award. And maybe that's why it didn't get any. Gosling, as playing Neil Armstrong, is playing this really unappealing, unknowable character. And there is very little... You get very little insight into who he is or why he wants to do what he does. There's a little bit of a poorly child thing knocking around. But that's I found that very compelling. But then just the actual filming of it, you're getting really close with these astronauts. You get this real amazing sense of how rickety being on one of these fucking spaceships was. It's why he made a film about it, because it's impossible to put into words. I felt like what it was to actually do what it was to get on the moon.
You felt like what it was to actually do what it was to get on the moon.
Exactly.
It really is impossible to put it into words.
It's impossible. It's just top tier filmmaking, like pure cinema filmmaking. It made me angry afterwards to think it was so roundly ignored. I can see why people didn't click with it. Maybe they thought it was boring, but I found it visceral and engaging, and I can't wait to rewatch it.
Wait, you're going to rewatch La La Land as well then? Because that's two of the lesser seen, I suppose, Damien Chazelle films right there, with First Man and Babylon. I know you like Whiplash. I think La La Land is... One of the great movies.
Yeah, I will rewatch that one properly. But I mean, that gets its due. I think it's getting a bit slept on, but it's not overlooked in the way that First Man is.
Well, no, it's not. No, I mean, I don't want to mess up the structure here. I'm just going to jump ahead just very briefly. I had two answers for favorite rewatch. One of them is La La Land, and the only reason I wrote it down is because the line I wrote in my movie diary after watching it was, I mustn't forget how wonderful this film is. It's something that happens to me. I watch La La Land and I recall, I go, oh God, it's an astounding piece of cinema. And then after about a month, I go, yeah, it's all right, isn't it? It's like, it's a bit corny, whatever. That's why I wrote that. Don't forget how you feel in this moment, La La Land. I would encourage you to revisit.
I will. Let's get back to you. What was the best film you watched from any year? The new to you award, best of new to you award. And please, here he is, it's Mr. Joe Devine.
Well, thank you, and thanks, it's so nice to see so many new and old faces here. And then you made a good comment, didn't you, about envelope? Yes, that's right. You said, I'm going to open the envelope now. I like to call it envelope. Some people call it envelope, but I call it envelope. And
so you're just redoing what? Okay.
I thought it was really good. I couldn't compete with it, so I just thought I'd just ape it, you know? But Hollywood's a very derivative place, isn't it? So it's fine. Now, listen, the film I watched that wins for me the Best New to You award for this year is the film When Harry Met Sally, which I watched in November for the first time.
Of course.
And I'm going to read you my little diary in, so it's only very small, but I think you can see sometimes I write things down as I'm going because I don't want to forget them afterwards, you know. And I think if you just see how how the film warms on me as it goes on. I wrote, yeah, it's pretty good. New York would be great if it was as empty as it is in this film. 32, they're quite old, I wrote.
Do you think they look 32?
No.
Yeah,
Meg Ryan could pass for 32 for sure, but Billy Crystal looks 50.
Yeah, when they start the film as like sophomores or whatever the fuck, it's so bad.
That's true. I thought
that's when they didn't care. That's why it's like casting Guy Pearce as an old guy in Prometheus. Yeah. Back when they made Harry Met
just
Sally.
Do it and don't bother to make him look young at all. I also had no idea what to expect when I watched When Harry Met Sally. I really didn't know anything about it apart from. I'd heard a couple of lines. I knew that there was like the infamous orgasm scene, whatever. So when they first meet and they're at college and Meg Ryan's driving back east and Billy Crystal is hitching a ride back, they've not met before and they are this kind of, you know, this slightly weird thrust together pair. I thought, oh, the whole film is going to be this drive. It's going to be the two of them. They're like, you know, college students. They're going back east. They've been thrown together in this like unlikely situation. She's very sweet and sort of Christian and believes in true love. He's this kind of harsh, you know, sharp-tongued, naive young man who enjoys kind of playing with his food, I think. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. Why did they cast people who are so old to do this, though? because they don't look their age. Anyway, 5 minutes later, it's 5 years later. 5 minutes after that, it's 10 years after that, you know. I'll go on. I wrote, the orgasm scene is kind of boring, I suppose. I said, is it her character to do that? I don't really know if it is. It's very joyful, though, the film is. And then I got to the scene where they're in the gallery together and they're doing the fun voices.
Yeah.
And I just melted. I wrote, the voices are amazing. I can see why people like this now. It is a top movie. Meg Ryan is wildly charismatic. And he does the corny lines really, really well. I've never watched a film where there are those kind of lines at the end where he sort of expresses to her that he loves her. I wish I could remember the famous catchphrase from that now. What is it that he says to her at the very end?
I love that you get cold when it's 71 degrees out. I love that it takes you an hour and a half to order a sandwich. I love that you get a little crinkle above your nose when you're looking at me like I'm nuts. I love that after I spend a day with you, I can still smell your perfume on my clothes. And I love that you are the last person I want to talk to before I go to sleep at night. And it's not because I'm lonely, and it's not because it's New Year's Eve. I came here tonight because when you realize you want to spend the rest of your life with somebody, you want the rest of your life to start as soon as possible.
You see? That is just like you, Harry. You say things like that, and you make it impossible for me to hate you. And I hate you, Harry. Hate you.
There's no hint of cynicism in it. There's no hint of, this is where I think sometimes the American comedians have an edge on European, on British comedians, because there's no hint of cynicism in that. He sells the meaning at the end of the film, and it's just wonderful. And I don't know why it took me so long to watch it. I think I was just turned off it because I thought it was some random famous rom-com that everybody liked and that whatever, it would be the same as all the others. It isn't. It's wonderful. So that's what wins the new to me award for 2024.
Favorite actor.
Joe's made a note here, not just for the films this year, but the whole narrative.
Yeah.
Who do you love this year? I mean, I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Well, let me tell you my answers first, because that'll give you a little set dressing, right?
Yeah, you do that, because technically it was my turn, but I think it's best if you go next.
It is, because I've got two, and one of mine is Meg Ryan, because I haven't just been watching When Harry Met Sally. I also recently watched Sleepless in Seattle for the first time, which is a mad film, but Meg Ryan's amazing in it. I rewatched You've Got Mail the other day, thinking, you know, okay, it was fine. It's not just fine. It's a great film. Meg Ryan is She's unbelievable, Adam. She was unbelievable in those films, and I didn't appreciate it when I was younger. Now I watch them, I look back and I think, wow. So that's my kind of, you know, that's my sneaky answer. The real answer for me is, and this is why I say it's not just necessarily from films this year, because the bigger film this year that this actor has starred in, I haven't seen yet. So it wouldn't be fair really to categorize this award as my favorite actor, but it's an actor that I think is going places. Yeah. It's an actor whose story I'm excited by and I want to follow. And it's an actor for whom I think 2025, 2026 could be a really big year. Okay. And that actor, it's Franz Rogowski.
Right.
Rogowski. I'm going to call him Franz Rogowski, who I watched last year in a film called Passages. We talked about that a little bit on this podcast. He's a German actor, and this year he's been in a film made by a British what was her name? British director Andrea Arnold.
Red Rose.
It's a film called Bird. I think he stars opposite Barry Keoghan in it. I haven't watched it. I've heard it's very good. I've heard lots of good things about his performance in it. All I can tell
mixed.
You...
I've heard mixed things about
mixed,
it.
Mixed, fine. All I can tell you is that watching him in Passages and then seeing people start to talk about him and seeing the kind of projects that he's involved in, the kind of films he's involved in now, I just feel a big future for this guy. He is the male version of Meg Ryan, if the male version of Meg Ryan came from Germany, you know? And I feel like maybe 1-2 years' time, I don't know what it would be that he would be cast in that will, you know, shoot him to the stars. But I think I'm going to watch an Oscar acceptance speech from this guy in the next 5 years. That's why he's my guy of the year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you?
It's a tough one. I'm going to start with a less obvious answer, although it's fairly obvious. I'm going to say Aubrey Plaza.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I saw her in two flicks this year. They weren't both from this year. They were from last year. But she was in two of the films I saw this year that I thought were really up there and fantastic. Was one called Black Bear,
mm-hmm.
where she plays a... It starts off and she's a writer and she's at this countryside retreat. It's run by a couple played by Christopher Abbott, really sexy guy I've talked about before. He's the husband and he has an attractive wife. And there's something very off about everything.
Mm.
And I don't really want to say much more about it.
They've left the milk for too long out of the fridge, that kind of thing.
She plays Emily. She's a regular Joe, schmo, struggling along in life. And it's just how she gets snarled up in some sort of ne'er-do-well activities. It's just kind of, it felt like one of those small indie films that they don't make much of anymore. It's tense and interesting. And so, yeah, I like that. And then she was in some silly Marvel movie. She was in a silly Marvel TV show. And
was she?
Yeah, she was in Agatha All Along.
Oh.
Briefly. She's very good in that. It wasn't a very good TV series, but she's bubbling around and she seems like she's just starring in really interesting things. So
I didn't realize that Agatha Christie was part of the Marvel franchise. Is that, it's her superhero ability that she's able to resolve sort of tedious crimes.
Yeah, that's what they've kind of created this meta, you know, character. And it's actually like that Agatha Christie has been writing all these stories all along.
Right.
Like at the end, like they're rebooting it because they all went off the boil and they realized that they kickstarted this TV show and they've got Agatha Christie in and she's authoring everything. It's kind of like that Will Ferrell movie, Stranger Than Fiction.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I think they got the rights. They thought Agatha Christie, true crime's hot. Let's have her have all the stories about Iron Man,
right,
etc. She's authored them. Yeah, it just doesn't really quite work as a TV show, but if that's the creative choice that they want to go with,
sure, yeah,
that's no skin off my nose.
Well, Miss
Aubrey Plaza. Sorry, yeah. Well,
Miss Marvel. Talk about Miss Marple. You know what I'm saying? I could have been Hercule Poirot could have been Hercules.
Hulkin Poirot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, never mind who done it. More like Pooh done it.
Yeah, yeah. Never mind the mouse trap. More like Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, never mind. Then there was one.
Yeah.
More like then there was a fucking million of these things.
Yeah, yeah.
Never ending. Yeah.
Never mind the murder at the vicarage. What about the murder at Tony Stark's massive skyscraper house?
Here's a little pullback reveal, listeners. When Joe starts saying things that are more specific and true and real, you know he's on Google and he's Googled list Agatha Christie novels.
Never mind murder on the Orient Express. More like murder on the Boringham Express with these Marvel movies and TV series. Jesus.
Oh, ugh. Evil in the Sun, more like shut up, you cunts.
The film you wished was better.
The first negative award, but we're at the midpoint, and this is where the bad things happen. At the midpoint of any film or episode, it's where you start to have doubts. It's a low point for every character, and it's where the mood shifts, and that is why this is where we talk about a movie we wish was better. So, and that's what the award is. And I'm going to go first because Joe's going to say something that we don't want to listen to.
Mm. You certainly aren't going to want to listen to it, but you specifically. But you go first.
Well, I'm going to guess what yours is after, but I'm going to take a run at this and I'll see if how much I can say.
Okay.
I'm going to say Alien Romulus.
Mm, okay. Okay.
I had high hopes. The director Fede Alvarez directed what I consider to be one of the best remakes of all time, Evil Dead. The Evil Dead remake, oh, bloody fun. I haven't liked much of his latter work, but if you know, surely I don't know how you fuck up an alien film. They have many, many times, but you keep thinking, how do they fuck up an alien film? Everyone seems to have liked this one, again, except me, which is perfectly on brand.
Cool guy.
It's got a really cool poster with the face hugger. It's all red. But the cast are really young and annoying. It takes all the best bits from the first, from Alien and Aliens, and the worst bit from Alien Resurrection for some reason. So
do you think it's dead now, the Alien franchise? I don't mean will they never make an Alien film again, because I'm sure they will, but do you think creatively it's squeezed?
Creatively, it's absolutely dead as fuck. This made money, Romulus, and they've greenlit the next one. There's going to be a TV series from the creator of the Fargo TV series,
right?
Noah Hawley.
Which was an excellent TV series.
I'm holding out hope that maybe that'll be good.
Mm.
He seems to have creative control. He does what he wants with the Fargos. So, yeah, cinematically, it feels like the donkey's dead. But maybe on telly with proper creative people like Noah Hawley, it'll find new life. Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
Hmm.
Mm. Mm. Mine's Civil War.
So what was the favourite movie from the podcast that we did this year? Because that's the next award, isn't it? The next award is... do you want to say some more about that?
Well, no, I think I thought it might hurt you.
It doesn't hurt me.
No, just because I know that you, not only did you really enjoy that film, but you also watched it with good friends together.
Yeah.
And you had a great experience.
We talked about it for afterwards.
Yeah, that was important to you.
That enriched it.
That enriched it for you.
It was the first time, it was the only time this year that I've seen the film.
Right.
Oh, no, wait, I saw Gladiator 2 with you, but we didn't talk about it afterwards.
No, we didn't talk about it afterwards.
It was the first time this year I saw a film with friends. I usually go to cinema by myself because... That's what happened. That's how. That's where
that's
I
just,
am.
That's just life. How it's panned out.
That's how it's panned out.
Yeah,
I don't like. It's hard to organize seeing things with people. I don't know whether they want to. / I don't want to ask or expose myself in that way, opened myself up to be hurt and rejected. This happened, plopped into my lap, great. And we all enjoyed it in similar ways, and we all had different exciting questions to talk about. It's like they used to do in the old days. Go to see a flick, go and talk about it afterwards.
You went to see it with friends and you liked it. That's right. That's right.
You saw it alone and...
Well, no, I saw it with my wife and it was too loud, you know? So I was having a different experience than you were. But mainly, I just want to caveat this by saying, because this, of course, as you'll remember, is the award for a film we wished was better. Not for a film that was bad, right? Just a film that we wished was better. I think Civil War had all of the potential to be a film that I really, really liked. And it was just a film that I liked in the end. I thought it was a bit tonally confused. I think it was the best thing on offer in its guise of the year.
Mm.
I thought it did a good job. I enjoyed the acting performances. I think the conceit was a little bit confused. And I thought tonally it was quite confused at points in the film. And I just thought it should have been better. And I think it could have been better. So the reason I selected it for this award was, it's not because it wasn't a good film. It's because it was a good film, and I was therefore disappointed that it wasn't better. Also, it's worth saying that I went through my film diary to answer these questions ahead of this podcast, and when I came upon that, I remembered that it existed. For me, it's very quickly going to become a forgot you forgot movie, and I think that the things I've just laid out are perhaps some of the reasons why.
Yeah, I think you're going to rewatch it when you've grown up a bit and you might like it a little bit more. I think you've brought some baggage to it.
Right, right, right.
Tonally, I think it's pristine and consistent. It's not perfect, and it probably will become... It's faded in my memory, and I look forward to rewatching it in a couple of years. It doesn't warrant immediate rewatching, and I imagine it'll probably diminish a bit. I'm a Garland guy, and at the very worst, it's 3.5-star film.
No, that's true. That's absolutely true.
Very few flicks get 3.5 stars.
Oh, well, then it's not true. Well, I wondered, because I know that you like the film so much and that you are a Garland guy, whether you wanted to use Civil War to play the box office game for this episode, Adam.
Yeah, that's good. Sure, let's do it.
Well, let's do it, man. Budget, brackets estimated, please, for the film Civil War, of course, directed by Dr. Garland. This was April 2024. How much money do you think it cost to make this baby?
I'm pretty sure I read around the time that it cost 60 mil to make.
Well, you can lock that in if you want.
Okay, 65 mil.
The estimated here is $50 million.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
A little cheaper. Little cheaper, perhaps.
Little cheaper, little cheaper.
Here's where it gets tricky, though. Okay, April 14th, opening weekend US and Canada, Civil War. How much does this film take? Because there wasn't a huge amount of competition for it around April, was there? And there was quite a lot of excitement.
Well, excitement for the cineasts, for people who get it, for people who know what's going on, for people who miss Alex Garland and his flicks at the cinema.
Mm.
But no, there's not big excitement
right
in the mainstream for this film at all.
Right, okay.
It's A24.
That's true.
You know, the A24 bros, sure, they're getting pumped.
It was their biggest film, wasn't it, A24? It was like their first big movie.
No.
No?
No, it was their big movie for this year, but certainly not their biggest movie.
What big ones have they done before?
Allow me to bring up. I've done some A24 research, Joe. Do you want some A24 films I'm going to list that have been pretty massive?
Oh, you've written these notes down?
Yeah, this is for something else. This is for my job.
Oh.
Just talking, like trying to explore the marketing excellence of A24.
Yeah, because they've really got a handle on that, haven't they?
Oh, they've got a handle, mate. When I say to you, everything, everywhere, all at once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Grossed over 140 million worldwide.
Incredible. That was an A24 movie, huh?
Yep.
Right, I didn't realise that was theirs. Okay.
Midsommar.
Right, yeah, that was a biggie.
Moonlight.
That was one of theirs.
Yep. All I'm saying is the films of theirs.
Right, right. So all okay. The ones you'll say now will be theirs.
Yeah, I'm not saying like Fox. I'm not saying Paramount.
Wait, Paramount was one of theirs?
I'm not saying Warner Brothers.
Right, right, right.
I'm not saying Orion.
Okay.
I'm saying A24 Films.
Yeah.
That's what the segment is.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
What else?
I mean, this is smaller, but After Sun was there.
Wait, that was one of theirs?
Past Lives.
Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah?
I knew that was one of theirs, A24.
That's one of theirs. Talk to Me, horror flick.
I don't know what that is.
Do you want a summary of why they're so successful marketing-wise?
Yeah, do they make all the good films? Yeah, I do want that, yeah.
It's not just the quality of the films, it's how they do it, yeah?
Ah.
Leveraging film festivals. Using festival buzz as both a marketing tool and a credibility booster. Audience-driven buzz. Letting fans amplify campaigns via social media. Turning grassroots enthusiasm into mainstream awareness.
Mm.
Targeting niche communities, reaching cinephiles, horror fans, and culturally specific audiences through tailored campaigns and experiential marketing. Those are just a few of the things that A24 has become a master of.
Wow. Is this going to be an Adam Richman feature?
I'm going to pitch it. Sure, I'm going to pitch it.
Mm.
But... you know, so when you sort of say that this is their biggest film, when you say Civil War's their biggest film,
that was wrong, wasn't it?
Sound like a massive fucking thicko.
Right, yeah. But guess what? Because of that, we've learned so much, me and the audience, haven't we? So it sort of works out in the long run, doesn't it?
When you type into Google Gemini and say, can you tell me about some of the marketing learnings I could get? Imagine you are a top marketing executive.
Yep.
Can you tell me?
Wait. Hold on.
No, not you.
You've instructed me to imagine.
Gemini.
Oh, right.
I don't want you to tell me because
you started to say imagine you are, and then I was like, oh, I'm game for this, but you don't actually want me to. Okay, you want Gemini to. Yeah.
I'm just telling you the prompt. You sort of say, adopt the persona of a top marketing advertising brand executive and tell me what the marketing learnings are from A24's marketing strategy.
Well, presumably it would take about 4 weeks to email you back, wouldn't it?
You would think so, but it writes it in front of you within seconds. It's absolutely made me thoroughly redundant. And
well, I mean, if it did that, then it can't be adopting the stance of a top marketing executive then, because they never reply with promptness, do they? They're always a way right, up themselves, okay, somewhere, aren't they? Away, yeah, and up themselves. That's why I thought it would take a month, because you know, or it, yep, would say something smug in its response to you. It would say something that made you feel smaller because you didn't work in marketing and you didn't understand the psychology of simple humans and how simple they are and how all they want is a penis or a vagina and they want some delicious sugary foods to eat until they get all swollen and then die. Or they want something that will make their bum smell nice and clean in order that they can find a mate. You know, that's it, isn't it? It's sugary foods.
Yeah.
Sweet, sweet love and affection and sex.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, that's right. That's right, Adam. We know. Sorry, it took me a while to get back to you there, pal. I've been busy. I was working with A25 new film company. Actually, one better than A24 there. And they're making some great top flicks. They're making flicks with a little-known French director, Hans. And he's going to be blasting up the Oscars next year, of course. Listen, the thing about marketing for A25 is it's nothing to do with your art house indie movies, Adam. It's to do with it's just about sex. Did you not know that? It's just about sex and strawberries and other delicious sugary fruits. Didn't you know that? I feel so sorry for you that you didn't know that. It really is very simple. What did you think it was?
Yeah, no, I don't know. They just hear about a flick and they want to see it. It's got like one of their favorite actors in, and they think it's the poster, and there's a log line. And I mean, people don't like to see sex in films anymore,
right? No, they say that, Adam, don't they? They say, but all they really care about is a big old bundle of tits and cocks. That's all they care about, Adam. Tits and cocks. Shove them in, stick them up, pop them around the back, and Bob's your uncle. That's you make $100 million in a movie because of tits and cocks, you know.
So Civil War came out in April, right?
That's right, Adam. Yeah.
So we're guessing what estimated brackets box office for first week US and Canada.
That's right, Adam. Yeah.
Is that
how much sex is there in that film? Do you think? Hey.
There's no sex in the film.
But you think there isn't any sex in that film, but you think there's some sex about that film, isn't there? There's a little bit of sex about that film, Adam, isn't there? Hey?
So I'm going to guess it made... it's a tough one. It's a tough one because it's going to be well marketed by A24.
How do you think they're going to market it?
I don't think it's going to do some... I don't know. What does this kind of flick make on 50 million opening weekend? Mm-hmm. It's got Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
She's not a huge star.
It's got Kirsten Dunst's husband.
Jesse Plemons,
that's right, yeah.
Let's say it made $8 million.
Well, Adam...
That's more. I bet that's not enough. I bet that didn't make that much. But I'm going to say 8.
You think it went down from there?
I don't know. This is tough. I've got to say 8.
But in your heart of hearts, you think it's lower than 8?
I mean, who cares about my heart of hearts? My heart of hearts has shit for brains.
It will surprise you, I think.
Yeah.
To hear.
I think it will. 25, is it jumper territory?
It's jumper territory, man. It made $25.5 million opening weekend.
Oh, that's bang on jumper territory. That's good to hear. Okay, good. That's amazing. A24.
Oh, congratulations.
This just for people to get that kind of turnout for a film like Civil War,
yeah,
is phenomenal.
Yeah, man.
People are so stupid and yet they turned out for something with some brains.
Yeah. Yeah.
They did sell it, I think, is a bit more action-y.
I remember it as quite action-y, though. So I think that's not too... You know, it's rather a crescendo.
But not the way that... It's not action-y like a Fast and the Furious. That's the kind of action that multiplex audiences want. And yeah. That's not what this was.
Well, they spend a lot of time in the car, but, you know, it's not like Vin Diesel's in the car. Paul Weller? Paul.
I'm a changing man. I wonder what the plot of those movies would be, Joe, if Paul Weller was behind the wheel instead of Paul Walker, which is what his name is, the dead actor Paul Walker.
Paul Walker. Died, sadly. Paul Walker.
Dead.
He is dead, isn't he?
He's dead, isn't he? Died well before his years.
Well before.
They didn't stop making the movies, though.
No, well, why would they? It's a cash cow, isn't it?
Let's stick his face on his brothers and let's get these flicks out.
Yeah.
Let's imagine that the character is still alive in these movies, but he just doesn't want to get involved in our adventures anymore. What a way to honour the character of Brian or whatever the fuck
his name
called.
Was Brian, yeah.
Brian. Hey, where's Brian? Oh, he just doesn't want to get involved in this one. You know, we're almost he's going to kill one of our family. Yeah, Brian doesn't give a shit anymore.
No, he's retired. Hey, where's Brian? What, Brian? You know, the guy who was here before, who clearly didn't fit into this group and, you know, was never going to stick around for a long time. You know, the guy who looked like he should have been doing musical theatre on Broadway. That guy who doesn't fit in our group. And wouldn't have, in any other world, have been considered a sort of dangerous driver or a cool guy. That guy, yeah, he's not here anymore. He's not in the group anymore, that guy.
He used to, you know, say things like he loved us and wanted to look out for us. But he's decided he doesn't want to be part of this next adventure where we, I don't know, fly to the moon and stop a disease getting released.
Sometimes I feel like Brian isn't even really Brian anymore. I feel like he doesn't act, you know, sometimes I'll grab him by the shoulders and I'll shake him and his face warbles in a weird way. And I'll say, Brian, why don't you act like yourself anymore, Brian? And he'll say, Brian, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing you would say, Tyrese, and your silly, hilarious patter. You just accept that Brian is Brian. He's always been Brian. And, you know, it's not someone with a blue mask on and... someone else's face, his face put on it. That's just not what would happen in our universe.
Vin, can I ask another question though? Something I'm confused about.
Yeah.
When did The Rock get here? And why is there an English guy in the crew now as well?
Well, the English guy was a baddie a bit ago.
Right.
Like, we crossed paths, but then actually then we turned out we got on eventually.
Yeah.
Because we liked him. And The Rock, same sort of thing. He was trying to catch us.
Yeah, because he was a baddie, wasn't he?
The Rock was a goodie.
No, but he was a baddie against us.
Oh, yeah, because we're goodies.
Because we're the goodies, right?
The Rock was a baddie, but then actually, you know, he realised that we were good guys.
And now he's with us.
And so now he's, even though the police think we're baddies, we're actually goodies, and so the police are baddies.
The police are baddies,
and Jason
aren't they?
Statham was a baddie.
Yeah, an actual baddie.
Yeah. And Jason Statham has a brother as well who's a baddie and sometimes a goodie and then also more of a baddie. And right. Their mum is Helen Mirren.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
And she's a goodie baddie.
Right.
Yeah.
And what happened to that one who played Anna Lucia on Lost? Oh. Is she still around?
Oh, yeah, man. She's my wife, I think. Or maybe sister. It's hard to tell sometimes. Sometimes I think she's my sister and sometimes I think she's my wife.
No, she's your wife. She was your wife, at least. Your sister's played by someone else and your sister was the one that is married to Paul.
Yeah, no, I know that. I'm just saying it's confusing for me, Vin Diesel. Like, sometimes the chemistry between us is like she's my sister.
Right.
You could never imagine us having sex.
No, and it makes sense, though, really, because I was thinking to myself, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about family around here, but
we do, Tyrese, because we are family.
None of us really have any family. I mean,
that's why it's so beautiful, because you're my family and I'm yours.
Oh, you mean me?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think about you in that way.
The chick from Hollyoaks, she came on late in the day.
Yeah.
She's a family. She's very, very attractive bit of family.
Well, it's very nice that you're saying that. But I always sort of I don't know if I should say. I mean,
what did you think?
I just sort of thought about you as like a
dad?
No, not a dad. More of a
uncle,
not really a family member, you know. More of a you know,
like a best mate.
So I was going to say, sort of like a colleague, you know, like a friendly work colleague, you know, because we work together, don't we?
Yeah, we do. But like, you know, work colleagues are, it's kind of family in a way, isn't it?
Like, I found
you die right for me, and I die for you, like, because we work together. Like, if you had to hand some forms in and you'd take a bullet.
I think it's confusing, isn't it? Because death and grievous injury is part of our workplace. And so these things can become crossed over in a confusing way with the more personal relationships we have with each other, Vin. Would I die for you? I mean, I don't think in the way that you're saying it. Could I die in your place? Feasibly, yes, because of the nature of the work that we do. But I don't know. I just, you know, I've worked in toxic places before where people have said stuff about we're all family, and it's never really felt like that. So I just thought here that it was more of a kind of, just a sort of more of a sort of healthy colleagues. We like each, you know, we have a barbecue. You'll make that joke about my forehead, and I'll make that joke about your, I don't know, your big pecs.
We have the same, but like, I could put you to bed, right? I could tuck you in at night.
I think that would be inappropriate.
No, but because we're family, and like after a barbecue, I could.
That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying,
and I'd read you a story.
No.
There's nothing weird.
The thing is,
there's nothing weird about wanting to, like, you know, read a bedtime story to a colleague.
I just want to put my foot on the brake. Just you know, just
the real one.
No. Metaphorically, Vin. Just
that's
because,
like, it's a big thing to say because we're car guys, and like, you're throwing in car.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
Okay. I just want to press pause for a moment on
what, on the film we're watching? Because we're watching a film as well. Like, so what do you mean? Like, that's confusing as well. I was enjoying this film we were watching.
You're not my dad.
What? I didn't... I mean, that's so personal to say to me.
What?
Son.
I don't want you to call me son anymore, okay? I don't want you to... I'm happy to hang out with you, come to the barbecue... I love the money. I'm happy to work here, but like, I don't know where you get this from. Okay, I'm older than you. Yeah, I've been around for longer than you. I have a dad already at home. I'm not interested in any more from you, and I don't want to have to go to HR, Vin, because I like this job and I think we have a good working relationship. But it is that it's a professional colleagues relationship. I don't want any bedtime stories from you. Okay, can you respect that boundary? It's not just me. Why do you think Paul doesn't want to come on our adventures anymore? Okay? Everyone around here is saying, why is this guy? We like him. We like you. We do. But why is this guy always pretending to be our dad? You just have some weird toxic energy, and you have to respect this boundary that's being placed down here. Otherwise, Jeanette from HR is going to have to talk to you. And you remember what happened last time, Vin. We don't want the awkwardness again, okay? Can you just put a fucking pin in it, please?
What, in the wall?
What?
Like, what, you want me to put, pin a poster up on the wall? So, yeah, it's the action's not like Fast and the Furious in Civil War. So, That's amazing it made that. And so now the question is, what, how much it made?
Well, it's gross worldwide, yeah.
So it cost 65. Let's say it made...
It didn't cost 65. That's what you guessed it cost. It cost 50.
It cost 50. Yeah. It cost 50.
Yeah.
So let's say it made a healthy 400 mil.
No, it made $126 million.
Oh, dear.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy.
The next two awards are just, they're little awards. They don't really, these are not the main awards. These are like your production, crafty ones.
Yeah, the ones nobody really cares about, but they have to have them to elongate the show.
Yeah, and incidentally, and coincidentally, they're the award ideas that I came up with.
Right.
Nice surprise award.
Film that you thought, oh, that was a nice surprise.
It's not a film that came out this year. It's a new to me film this year. Well, and I talked about this a little bit on a previous episode, so I'm just going to say it and not linger on it too much. But the nice surprise watch for me, new to me from this year, was a film that my friend and listener to the show, Paul, recommended to me. We watched together. It was a French movie called... Welcome to the Sticks, or there's the French title of that. I can't remember what it's called, but it was really, really funny. I really enjoyed it. It's quite old now, and I would heartily recommend it to anyone, particularly around such a festive time. You know, great family movie, and just really funny in a way that I wasn't expecting at all. One of those movies where I thought, oh, this is kind of a drag. My friend has recommended that I watch a French movie because he's part French. And guess what? It was just a delight. So thanks, Paul, and thanks to the people that made Welcome to the Sticks. Well done to everyone involved. What's yours, Adam?
Mine's Kneecap. Have you heard of Kneecap?
No, what's that?
It's an Irish film. It is. It's set in Northern Ireland. It's based on the real life escapades of an Irish rap group called Kneecap, who exist in real life. It's a bit fictional and a bit real. And they're these three funny, naughty lads. And it's also about, you know, what's going on in Northern Ireland and the context of that. So it's got something to say. It's very funny and profane. And I think everyone's slowly hearing about it. I think it's won some awards at one of the British or UK film awards. So you know
it stars Michael Fassbender.
Well, no, it doesn't. It features Michael Fassbender in two scenes.
Right. Does he play himself?
It stars the three lads of Kneecap.
Yeah.
So I would heartily recommend that. It's really entertaining.
Okay, I'll watch it.
Favorite rewatch.
Your favorite rewatch of a flick in 2024, and I'm going to start.
Go ahead.
I'm going to say Your Name. It was Your Name. Anime film that I mentioned to you a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah.
Directed by Makoto Shinkai. It's really hard to describe. It's about love, love across time and distance. It's got some a kind of crazy concept at the heart of it, body swap element. I hadn't seen it in a while, a couple of years. I mentioned it to my wife. We struggled to agree on a film. And I thought, oh, I'd love to rewatch this. I mean, it was that perfect window. It was, the kids were in bed.
Was it a hard sell to her? It sounds like it might have been a hard sell.
Well, no, she's in, because she's into Ghiblis.
Right.
A few Ghiblis. And so it's gorgeously animated. And I just thought, I think she's got to at least find this entertaining, I think. I mean, for me, it makes me cry. And it absolutely got me again. That's why it was my favourite rewatch. It just had me in, there's a bit, oh, floods of tears. And I kind of kept looking over my shoulder because I've redesigned the living room now. I had to look over my shoulder to see what she was thinking. And I kind of didn't want to know. I didn't want to see that she was bored or looking on her phone. But, you know, it got her.
Nice.
It's just phenomenal. Phenomenal film.
I'll watch it.
It's a must see.
Okay. Is it a 5-star?
It's a 5-star.
Oh, all right. I'll stick it on my list.
What about you?
I kind of cheated because earlier I said La La Land, which was one of them. I just wanted to throw this one in there. The other one was The King's Speech because of the difference between watching it the first time and watching it the second time. I really enjoyed being so wrong the first time round. So The King's Speech is my favorite rewatch of the year.
Most anticipated of 2025.
The now looking forward to 2025. What is the film that you're most looking forward to for 2025 award, Joe?
Well, I've got a couple on here. I hope you don't mind. I'll just buzz through them quickly. And I wonder if you'll have some of these on your list as well. This first one, I'm thinking maybe you will. Bong Joon-ho's first film since Parasite is coming out next year. Mickey 17 with Robert Pattinson. Have you got that on your list? Is that one you're excited about?
No, I've not because I'm not excited about it. The trailer looks very broad. It's also about clones and it feels very similar to an idea, a film script that I've been working on for quite some time.
Yeah.
And it's made that film probably pointless.
Right.
So
okay.
I'm not in any way looking forward to watching that.
No. And I think, well, what I was going to suggest was that we did watch it and then we talked about Kin, which is your film script, just to see, you know, because you know a lot about clone movies because you've been writing one for a long, long time. So I thought maybe there'd be some interest there. But no, I can see why you would have the opinion you do.
It can't even be called Kin anymore because there's a movie that came out again called Kin and then now there's a TV show about Irish people called Kin.
I saw that.
So the film title I came up with over 10 years ago, it's almost like time has caught up on me and beat me to the punch.
How often do you think that happens? Not with titles, but with films where, because you know they always say that thing about scientists over the years who live in completely different continents and never met each other are all coming up with stuff at the same time. Like, how often do you think someone's been slaving away over an incredible piece of art for a couple of years and they're just about, you know, there with it and then a film comes out that is that? You know, it must be crushing.
Yeah, I think it happens a lot because ideas are not, they're just all out there, aren't they? It's out there in the world. It's in the ether.
Yeah.
And you're fishing and luring in. That's what David Lynch chats about. You're just kind of reaching out and luring in it, stuff. That's why it's quite laughable when you have a lot of, I'd say, amateur writers who are very precious over their ideas and they don't want to talk about them because they think, oh, you'll steal my idea. Or they think Hollywood's, they'll send a script off and they'll go, you've stole my idea. It's like, very unlikely. There's no way your idea was that amazing and that no one else would have had it.
Sure, sure.
So,
well, in many ways, I wonder when I watch the trailer for Mickey 17, I can see the conceit and the inversion. I get that it's different from, but it's not so different from the world of Moon, for example. So perhaps your script isn't dead. Maybe in, you know, another sort of 6-7 years time, there'll be space for another one of these and it'll be that one.
Yeah. I mean, also my idea was deeply informed by Moon.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. the constant battle to make it not like Moon.
Right. Right.
And still, and very much my own. But I can see why you're looking forward to that. What else are you looking forward to?
Well, there's only one other one. And to be honest with you, I only heard about it today when I was looking for things that are coming up. I'm not so sure I would say I'm excited for this, but I'm definitely intrigued. to watch the film The Way of the Wind, which is Terrence Malick's latest. It's a biblical epic starring Geza Rohrig, who's the lead from Son of Saul, which is a troubling, difficult film to watch. And Mark Rylance plays four different versions of Satan, with Geza Rohrig playing Jesus.
Oh,
and that sounded funny. Oh, and then one other quick one. Paul Mescal is playing William Shakespeare opposite his wife Anne Hathaway, played by Jessie Buckley, in a British film. I can't remember the name of that one. But those two just sounded sort of bizarre and funny, and I'm into it. So, you know, I'm there. If Terrence Malick wants to make Jesus in the movie, I probably will go and watch that in the cinema on opening weekend.
Fair dues.
What about you? What are you excited about next year?
Well, I mean, I'm excited about some very mainstream things, as you'd imagine. Of course, I'm excited about the next Mission Impossible flick.
Oh.
Very excited about that.
Yeah.
I say very. I'm just reasonably excited about that. I'm pretty excited about James Gunn's Superman movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I really want to see what he's going to do with that. I really like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Do you like Superman, though? Because I've always found Superman so boring.
I think Man of Steel is super underrated.
Yeah, I never watched it, to be fair.
Like Henry Cavill is a superb Superman. And after that, Zack Snyder kind of got bogged down in a lot of other shit. It's like Superman v Batman and then Justice League, and but Man of Steel was a really good start. I really like it. It's not perfect. It's quite episodic and it's flawed, but it's a really good Superman flick. Russell Crowe is so good in it.
Is he? Rusty?
Yeah, so good.
Great. Okay.
So yeah, I want to see what James Gunn's going to do. It could be disastrous. Hopefully not. I want these films to do well. Everyone's always got the knives out for these kinds of films. They love it if a superhero film does badly.
That's right, man. I think you're right about that. You know what it's like. You go outside, you leave your front door, everyone's there with a knife. And you say, why have you got a knife? And they say, well, we heard there's a new Superman film coming out and we want it to do badly.
They do.
And you go, okay, that's a nice knife. And they say, I know, I spent a lot of money. It's a German knife. And then someone else comes over and goes, German knives aren't as good as Japanese knives. And then they argue about which knife is better. And the film does fine.
Yeah, when it'll come out, and people will go, oh, another superhero movie that no one wanted, and it's this and that, and it's horrible, and it's just boring. You know, they're just movies. Get over it, you know?
And I'll tell you, you know, social media algorithms have a lot to answer for, don't they?
They sure do. I'm fairly intrigued and excited by 28 Years Later.
I wondered if you were going to mention that. Yeah, I left it off my list because I thought you'd say it.
Purely because Garland's back. He scripted it. And Danny Boyle's directing it. I'm slightly perturbed because they've shot it on iPhones. That was a big thing of it. They've shot it on iPhones.
Oh.
And it's also like it's planned. Yeah, you can shoot a movie on an iPhone.
What, like with a mega expensive lens?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, okay.
that's the bit in footnotes.
Is it sponsored by Apple or something? Or is it like, were they getting money from Apple to do that? Or were they just doing it?
I think Boyle wanted to do it like that because of the... I guess the freedom it gives him shooting it. But then, yeah, they probably would have got a great deal with Apple because then Apple get to go, oh yeah, shot on an iPhone, which is the whole deal. And then I'm also quite excited by a couple of Marvel flicks coming out. Thunderbolts, which has got Florence Pugh in and looks quite fun. And Fantastic Four. They're doing a Fantastic Four.
Who's in it?
Pedro Pascal is Mr. Fantastic.
Oh.
Who's Mrs. Invisible? Mrs. Invisible, I think, is Vanessa Kirby.
Is one of them called Mrs. Invisible?
She's called Mrs. Invisible. Well, on the top trumps, we've got this amazing set. It's not amazing. We've got this set of top trumps, Marvel top trumps. And on the back of every single one, it says top trumps. And then there's a big picture of Spider-Man. And then on the front, you know, you've got your Marvel heroes.
Uh-huh.
And my son, my four-year-old, he found the pack and just started flicking through them, and he showed me all of them, and he said, who's this? And he he knows who Spider-Man is, but he'd show me the front and I'd say, oh, that's the Thing. And he'd say, the Thing. And then he turned it over and he'd go, the Thing. And then he'd turn it over and go, the Thing and Spider-Man. Who's that? Mrs. Invisible. Mrs. Invisible and Spider-Man. He did that for the whole deck.
Wow.
I liked that.
The things children say, they're ever so sweet, aren't they?
Dr. Octopus and Spider-Man.
Right.
I think he thought Spider-Man, I don't know, I think Spider-Man had extra importance because he's on the back of every single Top Trump. That story was more for you than the listener.
Yeah.
So yeah, Vanessa Kirby is the Invisible Woman, aka Sue Storm. And then you've got the guy from The Bear, Ebon Moss Bacharach, cousin.
Oh, right. You know, yeah, cousin.
Cousin,
yeah.
Plays the Thing.
Oh, that'll be fun. So it's a funny thing then. It'll be funny.
And then the guy in Gladiator 2 who plays the lesser mad emperor, Joseph Quinn.
Oh yeah,
is the Human Torch.
Right.
So yeah, great. I think that could be fun. Pedro Pascal.
Joe Quinn was the name of my wife's great grandfather. Died in a war. Joe Quinn, but he rescued a whole family. Not a whole family. He rescued a whole. I can't remember what the story was, but he rescued a lot of people. He did something very heroic, and I can't remember what it was now. But I'm sure it was historically important.
If I was trying to impress people, I would say I'm really looking forward to Nosferatu, the new film from Robert Eggers. I'm going to see that at the IMAX in January.
Right.
Booked my ticket. Mike Leigh's got a new film coming out called Hard Truths.
I wonder what that's about.
Yeah, tough one. I think... Yeah, maybe family and truths.
Isn't Hard Truths just the draft working title for every one of Mike Leigh's films before he comes up with a better title?
Yeah, and then just doesn't bother.
I don't know why. Do you know what? Mike Leigh's so easy to make fun of, and I really shouldn't because I like his films and I always think they're very good and they make an important point, don't they? They make an important point. I don't like all of them. Yeah.
He's got a pretty good hit rate.
Sure.
Mike Leigh. And then the other one I'm looking forward to is The Monkey, which is from the director of Long Legs, which looks like quite a fun gonzo horror.
Oh.
With quite a handsome chap from The Gentleman in, Theo James, is in it. I'd recommend watching the trailer for that. You'd be like, oh yeah, that looks good.
Okay.
It's about like some mad possessed toy monkey and random deaths. So that's my 2025.
I wanted to play a game with you, Adam, because it wouldn't be a podcast if we didn't play a game. And what I've done is I've asked you to prep a little bit for this game. I asked you to send me a handful of examples of films that came out this year that had a leading male protagonist in them. And I gave you no more information than that. Okay? Here's what you came back with. You came back with the films Dune 2, Gladiator 2, Monkey Man, Joker 2, and Deadpool 3. These are the films you came back to me with, okay? The game is, which one of these actors would have been better in that lead role? Is it Brad Pitt or George Clooney? Yes! Welcome to the Pitt or Clooney game. We can update this every year, Adam. It's got endless sequel potential for the Pitt or Clooney game. Now, for new listeners, it's worth saying Adam and I have a long history of talking about Pitt and Clooney and arguing over who's better, which one has a range that the other does not. Can Clooney do Pitt's films? Can Pitt do Clooney's? It's a sort of never-ending well of joy for us. And so I thought, Do you know what? If Pitt and Clooney were in these new films this year, who would have done better? Now, Adam, you know, whenever we talk about...
Hang on, please. I've just got to say, this is a great game. This is a great game.
You like it? Good, good, good. And you know that the stakes, whenever we talk about Pitt and Clooney, they're high. So you have to be very, very honest with your answers, okay?
Always.
You can't tip it in favour of Clooney because you're more of a Clooney guy and I'm more of a Pitt guy, okay?
My fingers are not on the scale. I'm not you.
There's no thumbs on the scale. Excellent.
No thumb on the scale.
Fine. So let's begin with the film Dune 2, which of course we know the main character, Paul, is played by Timothy Chalamet. Is it Clooney or Pitt that would make a better Paul? Now, I think I know my answer, but... what do you think?
I've got an answer, and I'll back it up.
Yeah,
Paul Atreides is an idealistic, wide-eyed, hopeful, handsome young man. But obviously, he's going to be aged up.
Yeah,
it's got to be Clooney.
Are we already going to argue over this?
Brad Pitt is far too cynical to play Paul Atreides.
No, he's basically the guy from Troy. He's Achilles. You know, Paul Atreides is like a grumpy, sulking teenager who's kind of good, though, you know, and he's good at fighting.
Brad Pitt sucks in that movie. No, he sucks. Absolutely sucks ass in that flick.
I can't believe you think Clooney would make a better Paul Atreides. It's blown my mind. I knew this would be a good game. Fine. Well, listen, listeners can please send us an emails to moviesyouforgotyouforgot@gmail.com and tell us, give us your answers to these as well. You can title the email Pitt or Clooney, and we'll definitely get to that. Because I just have a feeling, I have a strong feeling that most people are going to think Pitt would make a better Paul Atreides. But okay.
I think it's a coin toss, and on that...
it's going to be a coin toss on most of them, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose we could extend it and think younger versions of them, maybe. It doesn't have to strictly be the 50-year-old guys this year.
Of course. I want to see. Yeah. Okay. Come on. Keep going.
Imagine like 55-year-old Clooney in this film being like, hey, guys, have you ever tried Nescafe? You know, what do you think? Getting parched out here in the desert?
Go fuck yourself. Listen, Brad Pitt's as much as a fucking advertising slag as Clooney. No.
I was just thinking of smooth Clooney, and he's extra smooth in those Nescafe adverts. It's not even Nescafe, is it? It's something else. I can't remember what it is. Anyway, the next film is Gladiator 2 with the Paul Mescal role. Who would be a better Paul Mescal? Is it Pitt or Clooney? Now, come on.
Okay, listen. You're just going to go, try, you fucking cunt.
No.
Fuck you.
Because listen, my conceit for this is that Clooney would be good in the Denzel role. Clooney would be great in the Denzel role. Pitt couldn't do the Denzel role. He couldn't. He's out of his range.
Listen, okay. Pitt has got action, a bit of action over Clooney, mm-hmm, okay? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this has got action, okay? So I'm going to give you Pitt on this.
Okay.
Of course, in fact, not just going to give you on Pitt. I'm not going to give it to you. It's Pitt. Right.
It's Pitt. You're right about that. Thank you for your honesty. And this is why I didn't tell you what the films were for when I asked you to pick them, because otherwise I thought you might unconsciously weight them. I think others...
Can I say about in terms of picking this list, mm-hmm. I thought you were aiming to say something deeper about the state of how many films this year had a lead actor in. And I thought you were going to be some kind of like Joe Rogan type, and you were going to sort of say, look at this, there's hardly any men in films anymore.
look at these soy boys. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is very bold. It was quite difficult to come up with... not that difficult, but I was really sure. I took it quite seriously. I needed to do it fairly quickly, but I was like, it didn't feel like there were loads. Anyway, carry on.
I appreciate the work you put into it. I mean, the next one is a film, incidentally, you said you really enjoyed. It is Dev Patel in Monkey Man. Now, I haven't seen this one, so I'm not going to be able to offer an opinion. But what do you think?
It's more action. It's kind of John Wick-y.
I mean, it's sounding a little Pit to me.
It's sounding a little Pit, but there's a lot of emotion in it and a lot of heart that I think Pit lacks.
Right, Pit's got that. He's got that coldness.
I mean, I just think if I say Clooney, everyone's just going to think I'm insane, which is
Listen, I think there's more Clooney's coming up, right?
I'd have the screaming. I'd have an argument with anyone.
Sure.
But just to be hands up, let's be honest. Let's say what most people would say.
Yeah, you're
well.
Thinking about those emails coming in.
No, I think, you know, I don't want to be a dick. I could possibly wangle Clooney in that role, but it's Pitt.
It's probably Pitt, right?
It's probably Pitt.
Yeah. I like, we should rename this game, Adam Tries to Explain Why Clooney Would Be Better Than Pitt in all of these films. But no, I admire your honesty there. And I think you've done that with the look ahead to the next couple of films.
I'd like to see Clooney in all of these.
Well, okay, but then what about Joker Durr, you know, Joker number two? I mean, it's a straight up Clooney, isn't it?
Is it?
I think so. Is it? You think it's Pitt?
I don't think it's either.
Well, no, it's not either of them, but if it had to be one of them. Although Clooney, I've never seen Clooney trying to do crazy before.
Yeah, you see, I've seen Pitt. Pitt would just pull out his 12 monkeys. I think it's Pitt again.
Maybe
Pitt
it's
just
Pitt.
Plays Pitt Fight Club.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Joker is very much Tyler Durden. And the, you know, I can't remember the character's name in 12 Monkeys. Joker's Pitt, mate.
That's
Pitt's
right.
Already done it. If anything, it's derivative of,
wow,
of Pitt.
Wow, I never even considered that.
Yeah,
these are the kind of insights you get from the Is It Pitt or Clooney game. I never thought that was Pitt. Okay, you're right. Well, Pitt's walking away with it here, to be honest, because apart from when you tried to say that George Clooney would be a better Paul Atreides, Pitt's got all of them. So what about Deadpool 3? Is that Pitt as well? Surely not. Well,
as Hugh Jackman or...
No,
as
it's
Deadpool.
Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, that's Clooney.
It's Clooney,
he's
right?
Funny.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and Pitt's not that funny. He's kind of funny, but he's not that funny.
He's kind of funny in
Wow.
But yeah, no, that's Clooney. Let's say Clooney.
Wow. So that's interesting. That's interesting, isn't it? Because of all these films that came out this year, all these big films, Clooney's only in the one that's broadly a comedy with some action. You know, action as a secondary, I would say. And Pitt, despite you thinking he has a smaller range overall, he's the right one for all of the films of this year. Wow.
No, well, not June 2.
Yeah, except it is, also, really, isn't it? It really is.
A long time ago, I was in Burma. My friends and I were working for the local government. They were trying to buy the loyalty of tribal leaders by bribing them with precious stones. But their caravans were being raided in a forest north of Rangoon by a bandit. So we went looking for the stones. But in 6 months, we never met anyone who traded with him. One day, I saw a child playing with a ruby the size of a tangerine. The bandit had been throwing them away.
So why steal it?
Well, because he thought it was good sport, because some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burst.
Anyway, well, thanks for that. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a nice festive year.
Yeah.
And have a great 2025.
Oh, yeah.
And thanks for listening. Everyone who's ever emailed us and anyone who's ever followed me on at Error of Ways.
It's a marvel anyone's ever found your account, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but anyway, yeah, thanks to everyone. It's we're still going, we're still here, and it's all, well, I'd say it's all because of you. It's not really, it's because of me and Joe.
Yep.
But it means a lot when anyone's ever talked about the show in my letterbox comments and emailed us. We do read them.
Yeah.
And we'll do another correspondence episode. And maybe we'll get to the communal list one day.
Maybe we will.
Let us know if you care to. Let us know what your rewards for this year would be, but only in the categories that we've just created. I'm not going to list them now. You have to note it down.
Yeah. No new categories either. No, nothing. No, not allowed.
Not interested. Not interested in what your favourite cinematographer was.
No.
What your favourite bit of soundtrack was.
Yeah, don't care about
These are not of any interest.
We don't really care about you. What we care about is how you reflect us back to us. You know? That's what we care about. make sure not to put too much of yourself in there. Just put some of us in there, yeah? Because we like us. But you, we're less keen on.
Okay. Say bye, Joe.
Bye, Joe.